series.
Yeah.
I can't find it. I'm going mad. Which is similar. The base on the South Indian as well, but slightly different. We obviously got some more stuff today, so I think the next one is all over on the hands and all look limber.
Certifiers that I was asked through the Commissioner about. You heard a question about whether the horticulture industry has a preference or not about who these certifiers are. Are they people who are also doing the gap side of things, or need they be different? Do you think that the industry has a view about that?
Yeah, well, we think alignment of the industry programs with the regulatory requirements, and so that gap customers find their standards, and it's a third party independent audited by the SGS Audit Quality. So we would anticipate that those third party independent auditors who use the GAP program and market insurance would also meet the requirement for being recognised auditors under the Fresh Water Farm Hand Regulations. With the certification process, the one that is in the Fresh Water Farm Hand Regulations is one where qualified people with experience in farm planning, certified farm planners that have been admitted to stand in. We have industry specialists who help growers with their AMS farm plans now, and we would anticipate that they would be super supervised. So, for example, Mr. Barber and Ms. Deal, who are presenting evidence for appointing CBGA today,
finally, you heard some of the stuff.
Is it possible to have some documentation about the EMS system and the process for selecting certifiers and things like that?
I think Andy Barber, Ms. Barber, has either sent around or will send around some information about the EMS.
Yes, sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Nance, but yes, I was going to propose that we do that through Mr. Barber. He helped write quite a few of those documents, so he seems to be a natural witness for that.
Thank you.
And finally, you would have heard discussion in legal submissions about how the plan could or should describe the growing operation that's happening under the existing CBP rule. What's your understanding of what growers require of the existing CBP rule?
So what we anticipate is, what is required is for the vegetable production to be considered as an area of vegetable production within a given area. And that area can move onto different lands as part of the rotation. So the rotation has a temporal dimension, which is about the sequence of crops and species of land, but also a spatial dimension where crops are then grown on different pieces of land at any given time, and those pieces of land change sometimes. And that's because about 50% of land is leased, or growers' land is leased, and from time to time, leases are cancelled. So the land will may decide to do something else, to be then urban rezoning. lodging, one sale in solar farms, another thing. So from time to time, a small amount of leaves has been used for the unique endonomophy. But the growing operation, in order to, I suppose, maintain its area or its production, would need to move water on the end. So from a grower perspective, the sub-catchment is too small to find suitable land. Let's say the lease is comes to an end, to find another suitable piece of land. The EMU scale provides a good degree of flexibility because there is quite a lot of land that's been used for CVP in that area. So that's
a message. Thank you. That was all I had. Just something interesting. Thank you. If you just remain seated, please. I see any questions from my learned friends. Thank you, Ms. Sands.
No, thank you, sir.
No, thank you, sir.
I apologise, Mr. Mindenek.
Any questions?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Ms. Sands. Now, I do have some questions, and because you're the first witness and sort of an industry witness, it may be that some of them are better directed to other witnesses. By all means, direct me to who else they should go to. The first aspect I do wish to address you on is the points made in my friend's submissions for you in terms of this whole question of everyone doing their part. Now, the submissions before lunch suggested that everyone doing their part was superficially attractive, as I heard it, and that it was based on everyone equally contributing contaminants. And a suggestion that that was not actually the case. Is that essentially what you understand Horticulture New Zealand's position to be?
We're comfortable with, you know, CDP, you know, all of them will need a consent. They all need a farm environment plan, and they all need to meet the conditions of the consents. And so we see that system is one where they will be managing the effects of their activity, and they should manage the effects of their activity. And I think the words of the policy, I don't have them in front of me, but they are about managing them, you know, to reduce them as far as they can. And so I think that in that respect we are committed to reducing the environmental effects of vegetable production. But I suppose one of the things that is to be thought about is the role of nitrogen, and I suppose in determining the intensity of an activity. So there are more, you know, E. coli, sediments, and nitrogen, phosphorus as well. When you think about the contaminants that are most degraded or most more degrading, often that's E. coli and sediments, and CDP is not necessarily the most intense activity across all of the contaminants. And so I think that's worth considering. And the other thing is really about that proportionality. So it is a small activity, and so whilst it can manage its effects on the farm scale, the consequence of say flexibility to provide the rotation is very small. And so we say that should be provided for.
Sure. So there's a couple of bits to tease out in that. So firstly, as far as your evidence, we've heard these statistics a number of times about CVP being about 0.5% of the land area in the overall PC1 catchment, but about 2.5% of the nitrogen load. So that essentially means that CVP is heavily overrepresented in terms of its nitrogen load per hectare, essentially, isn't it?
It is, so the leaching associated with CVP
And in terms of the contributions, the equivalent contribution per hectare, say, also in terms of phosphorus, that would be potentially overrepresented as well?
I'm not sure about that, but with phosphorus, it is well managed through erosion and sediment control, and so there are, at the farm level, very good mitigations for managing the risk of the loss of sediment and phosphorus from CBP and complicated with erosion and sediment control measures, and Mr. Barber can speak to those and the effectiveness of them.
And then one of the other aspects you mentioned before was about it being a very small contribution to the overall catchment. You would accept, though, that each individual farmer, grower, operator, they will actually be a very, very small proportion of the overall catchment load, won't they?
Farm by farm, but when we think about it from an industry perspective, then, you know, and that's the difference. But of course, there'd be big farms that have to maybe smaller than some pastoral farms.
But the way that PC1 seeks to achieve the progress towards achieving the objectives is about on-farm change on an individual farm, farm-by-farm basis, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And also, CBP will require a consent, which isn't the case, but, you know, the other activities, many of which have permitted half, and so quite strict controls within that control activity part for existing CBP. So really, what we are seeing is that CBP doesn't have to do FEP and manage the effects, so you're very comfortable with that, committed to it. What we're seeking is conditions that allow the CBP to actually operate, to be able to rotate and to maintain soil health, which is really an important part of environmental protection as well. So that is our main interest.
Yes, and so on the question of minimum standards, so your evidence, you refer to GAP, but that doesn't actually provide specific performance minimum standards, does it?
It provides for a risk-based approach, and it sort of relies on research codes of practice, and then it steps through things that a grower must consider when they're developing their FET, but it doesn't specify that you might undertake one particular practice like a buffer strip, and that's because our experience is, the research is, that sometimes there is taking a risk-based approach might mean that they consider a buffer strip. It might be better to actually do a more extensive mitigation that might be a similar problem. And so we would direct them to do that paddock scale, farm scale assessment within the EDP. And of course, for CDP, they're not permitted, so they're not, those minimum standards, you know, so they're having to do the EDP part of the consent.
We heard in the submissions, though, that essentially the argument being that Horticulture New Zealand, CBP, is being treated more harshly than other activities, one of the examples being that there isn't a permitted activity status pathway. But on the flip side, there are no minimum standards being offered in terms of CBP that might provide comfort as to how it could occur safely from an environmental perspective at a permitted level, is there?
Well, I don't think it's been proposed to be a permitted activity. So, I mean, if it were a permitted activity, then that would be quite, you know, quite different thing.
And so, could I take you to your Appendix 1, just at the back of your evidence? And so this is outlining CBP operations in the broader Pukekohe sort of area. Just to be clear, as far as the grey shading, does that essentially separate the Lower Waikato River FMU from Auckland, essentially, as far as, so PC1 covers the grey hatched area, but nothing north of that?
Yes.
And so the congregation of CDP in the broader Pukekohe area, there's a fair chunk of it that sits within Auckland, and then there is also in the bottom part of the page that area, particularly around Pukekohe, for example, that's within that Lower Waikato FMU. And now, do you have a set of the PC1 provisions?
I don't have them.
To hand? So if you go, it's map 3.11.2. I'll just get your page reference in that version. A fair way through the document. Page 73.
Yeah.
And so the area that CVP from that map attached to your evidence, it's in the very northern part of the catchment in terms of those areas, sort of numbers 4, 6, 3, that sort of area.
Yeah.
And so they've got different colours, each of those sub-catchments. Are you aware of the significance of those different colours?
That's related to the CDP data, isn't it?
Correct. And so, for those, for the blue and green subcatchments, that's year 4 and 5 that NFEP might be required. Mm-hmm. And so, in terms of PC1, if it were to become operative, let's say middle of next year, in terms of CVP, existing CVP operations that are within those catchments that are blue or green, that means that an FEP wouldn't be required until 2027 or 2028 potentially, or even 2029.
I think that might be more of a question, so I think it might be better to ask
Certainly. Okay. I'll ask the other questions about the witnesses. Thank you.
I've just had a couple of questions and clarifications. And they relate to the Pukekohe vegetable growing area, which you have written in your evidence. And there were two aspects to that. One was just a question of clarification. When we're talking about commercial vegetable production and the rotation that occurs across units over time, which you spoke to, and I suppose the importance is that if one can define geographically the area in which that's happening, then one can identify and manage the keynotes of every aspect of discharges, that's the approach, isn't it? When I was looking, obviously, at the book of growing vegetable growing area, it has an additional challenge, doesn't it, though? It's partly in the Lower Waikato catchment and partly in the catchment of the Manukau Harbour. Is that correct?
Yes, it's kind of more related to the ground than it is to the superstore catchments, which
And I suppose, well, in acknowledging the principle if we were talking about rotation entirely within units that are within the local catchment. Is there an additional challenge that that gives rise to in terms of being able to identify and manage and attribute between effects within the Waikato and effects outside the Waikato? Assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, rotation can rotate in and out of the catchment.
Yes, I mean, grass certainly rotate their crops across the region, the Waikato region, because the catchment ground is residential, and so you can stand in one field and, you know, some of the rest of the Auckland and some of the Waikato. So that is real. I suppose we accept that the plan change one provisions relate only to the Waikato side and to the Waikato is in use on only on this site, and so when we are suggesting an area, you know, that is a new restriction on the road's rotation.
Is the desire though, as just again, this is, excuse my ignorance, is to be able to continue to rotate out of the Waikato catchment into the Manukau catchment and back in again within the purview of the PC1 rules management regime, if you call it that?
Well, we would, you know, we would like to see more national consistency in terms of the way that vegetable production is managed, because it is, because it is important for our food supply in New Zealand, and because of, you know, this isn't the only area actually that spans regional boundaries. Yes, and I suppose when we're thinking about policies that might support the specified vegetable growing area, we would like to see Waikato Regional Council and Auckland Council thinking about that area in a more joined up way in the future plan. But in this plan, we kind of accept Lower Waikato as the unit and offer full rotation, and we would like, you know, an area within that unit. And so we're not, I guess, even challenging that part of the process.
No, it was more, I suppose, if we're trying to, once we've got the numerical model that allows us to assess and judge effects and improvements going forward, to be able to, I suppose, differentiate, even though effects may be at a small scale on the case of plants by a CVP, those that are within the catchment and those that are outside, which obviously don't impact upon the health and well-being of the way that a river, let's not say other waterways aren't equally important, in terms of what we're trying to account for and address here, is there a mechanism for that attribution? That you're aware of?
So I think that, but from my perspective, the catchment scale models that have been used for plan change one are reasonable and they've been relied on by Hawkins Ed, and you know, on the Auckland side they've got a very good fresh water management tool. Both of those sort of make kind of quite broad brush assessments about the losses from different land uses and enable kind of a catchment scale load assessment for various components to be made. In my opinion, it's not absolutely necessary that that exact same tool is used at the farm scale. What you need at the farm scale is to understand the effectiveness of mitigations, and that can be more informed by farm scale research, and so there needs to be a link between those two things, but I think in my view that they don't need to be exactly the same. So I would say at the moment we do have some tools to help us with both that kind of catchment scale fresh water limit setting, which happens up at the MMU scale, or you know, in the NPSFM, it can happen at the MMU scale or at the sub-catchment scale, and for that to be sort of related but not exactly the same, and for some scale time effects assessments or the assumptions about the effectiveness of spoke the modelling that we did that I spoke about earlier, that was with sports evidence of heritage, farm scale expert modelling for the Auckland implementation, but and that's used as the Auckland model, but they're equally, you know, probably relevant to the work.
And so is it in terms of rotations, particularly people are rotating in and out, is it effectively that area of the lower Waikato catchment and the northern Waikato catchment being essentially treated as a single catchment unit for the CBD purposes, is it?
From a grower perspective, yes, they have similar soils, similar climate, you've got the same labour, yes. So they are one farm that crosses the boundaries, subject to two different sets of regulations.
And different effects in the different environment.
Yeah. And so from a farm plant perspective, then that's where that localised,
and so ultimately it would be important then as we move forward to be able to ensure that we are able to identify and differentiate those effects within those different catchments and the improvement that's occurring in terms of discharges.
Oh yes, and the way that farm plans for CBP work and risk assessment is that it does take both a kind of a block scale assessment as well as then aggregating up to the rotation, so that it does operate both of those scales.
Okay, thank you. And look, you also referred to the integrated catchment management plan initiative that's been sponsored. There's obviously the money involved by MFE and MPI in relation to the really beautiful growing area. Are you the best person to ask questions about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's a bit of it. Obviously, that involves tons of people in terms of Waikato Climate Union, three groups associated with Waikato Climate Union, Ngāti Tiata, Ngāti Tamaoro, and Ngāti Tika. I suspect that one of the challenges that governments and working party in the development of that integrated Kukakui catchment management plan is going to try and grapple with is some of these issues that we're talking about in terms of how you effectively manage that area going forward and how it speaks to both Te Tiri Whanganga and the Waikato catchment, but also the interest of those iwi and those hapū and the manuka and Southern Tamaki. That will be a key aspect of that will have to be the subject of ongoing discussion through that process.
Yes, I mean it's a very long-term sort of relationship that we're looking to sort of establish with the Kāwanata and the ongoing program of work. But together we have kind of agreed on a vision, and that vision does kind of look to healthy fresh water and the catches that flow from within that Kukui area, but also wild supplying fresh vegetables to health and well-being for the Spartanoa. So it holds both of those parts in the vision for that catchment. And I think that there's a commitment there from vegetable growers to do everything they can in terms of on-farm practices and fresh water farm plans, but also to commit to ongoing research and seeking to work collaboratively with on future research projects about vegetable production, but also to recognise, the specified vegetable growing area, it's because that area is important for domestic food supply, but it's also because the nitrate levels in the groundwater are high, and so there's kind of a recognition that it could be that communities could decide to they can decide to just maintain water quality rather than improve if improving was going to threaten food supply, food security, but equally, they could decide on a different way of approaching the limit that enabled vegetable production to because of COVID and sediment's a real issue in the Manukau impacting on the Manukau. And so collectively as a group we're looking not just, we are really focused on reducing the effects of vegetable production, but we're also looking wider about, I suppose, kind of thinking about like those streams, they're so important for our food supply, and the resilience of them, we would like to see it improved because we rely on those sources, we rely on that ground for our food supply. So it's kind of about, I suppose, investing in that whole catchment so it can be healthier, so it can continue to sort of support human health.
That's right, and it's a broader conversation than, well, perhaps in court and preparing vegetable growers are key players in that. It's a broader conversation regarding health and wellbeing of those catchments as a whole, so not simply focused on the commercial vegetable production, but on other mitigations and other initiatives that can come throughout that process. Because you obviously mentioned sedimentation on the Manukau wasn't simply a CVP problem.
No, that's right. But we recognise that the contributions are really focused on our erosion and control part, but also recognising that, yes, the erosion and control country, that's so it's both of those things.
And just following in that regard, we've had a bit of a discussion today with others about the NPDCFM, but it would seem to me, in principle, looking at the participants and that process, that could be a really valuable, collaborative process moving forward to informing, at least in relation to both the Waikato sub-catchment, but also the Manukau catchment, about some of those factors that would need to be developed under the NPDCFM in 2020. Would you agree with you?
Yes, yeah, I mean, we
recognise
that the process that we've been going through is not that scheduled one process,
yeah,
but it is a process that we've had a lot of dialogue with one thing we're about, what that specified vegetable growing area policy means and whether they, that food supply and food security question, how that should be addressed and, whether it is in the way that the limit is designed or whether it is in the way that the target HQ state, the living emissions of the target HQ state. So we've had those really valuable conversations, which I think will help inform the next phase.
And I suspect what New Zealand shares the view of why at the time that those collaborative processes are far preferable to ending up in courts, as we've seen with Whenua regarding a very similar special vegetable growing year under the NPDCFM in 2020. This is a way of trying to work through those issues and see if we can find a way forward.
Yes, certainly. And, because for us, for vegetable, when we think about semi-farmland, that's a long-term vision. And from a vegetable growing production perspective, vegetable growing is very likely to be here for the long term. We need to continue to be able to feed New Zealand and its rich vegetables, and so we need to manage the effects of that. But in our view, we also need to make provision for that within the environmental limits, and we need to be really, I suppose, we just want to be really open that this catchment, the Waikato, is very important for supporting the health of New Zealand in terms of vegetable production, and there is an environmental effect of that. We do our best to manage that, but it's not nothing. And so it does need to be accounted for in the way that the limits are set and with the ambition that is set for the target HQ states as well.
I'm going to address it within those parameters, yeah. Thank you. Happy questions.
Can you read some of those? No.
Sorry, so just before, I don't think you asked me. I had no questions anyway, but just for the record, I had no questions.
I apologise. I don't know why I was getting over the people at that table. I'll make a special note. Ryan, any questions?
just one question, really. I'll start off with, are you the right person to ask questions about the risk scorecard to, or is it Mr. Barber?
I'm
the
start.
Thank you very much for your reference and some of your skills.
I call Stuart Easton.
Solemnly, sincerely, and carefully declare and affirm that the evidence you're about to give to this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Can you please take the full name for the court?
Stuart Graham.
And did you prepare written evidence and participate in a joint witness statement on water quality in this appeal?
I did.
And do you have any corrections to make in any of that evidence?
Yes, I do have one small correction to make in my evidence in paragraph 4 in the executive summary and also in paragraph 15. This claim has been made, and that is so that is say that there's minor increases in some catchment and catchment, not generally associated with some increase in areas that we've made, and that super max equilibrium is 0.2%, that should be 0.7%, so that all refers to table 6 and 1. So table 6 is correct, it's just an reference to that table 6.
So paragraph 4 and 50 is
just
a typo, it doesn't reflect the table.
Right.
Okay. And you're obviously familiar with and read the code of conduct for expert witnesses?
Yes.
Agreed to comply with that? You agreed to comply with that?
Yes.
Given the evidence?
Yes.
And just a couple of supplementary questions in terms of aspects of the joint witness statement that have been discussed in this appeal so far. You would have heard a lot of reference to question 49 talking about the potential for localised effects in certain areas. That was a statement that you agreed with, right?
That's correct.
And what, can you just explain for the benefit of the court what you mean by the potential for localised effects in certain areas?
Yes, so that's in relation to crop rotation.
Okay.
And so, as in the that's the ground in that question 49, and that's a paragraph that's repeated from my evidence, which states that there would be, that provided the crop rotation at the extreme scale would result in no net change in the end load at the continuous rotation scale at over medium to long scales. So the idea is that crop rotation, by definition, there's no net area change in the season pack. It just rotates to a different place. And so the potential for localized effects is related to that the change in place, there might be a potential change in sensitivity in the environment. Or, in my assessment, I showed that the majority of CVP rotation rotates with itself, so CVP is rotating to existing CVP generally, generally for disease management reasons or soil management. So, in that way, there's no, at the scale of the unit where it's assessed, say, at HMS scale, there's no change, there's no net change in load from CPP. However, one of the scales is potential for, say, a more intensive rotation rotates with a less intensive rotation, get one rotation, and it might be the risk of some small increased effects, but there would be a commensurate reduction in risk of CPP in other location. That rotation is a swap.
And I hear what you're saying about FMU being different to localised, but is there localised effects, is that the same or different to effects at the subcatchment level?
No, that's smaller than the subcatchment level. And localised, it's you could also say in time as well as in the area, because they rotate in time. So over the medium to long scales is what that's referring to. We would be expected to rotate back again. They don't just rotate once, they will rotate again. And so those potential effects would be able to impact the performance of the scale.
And my only other question is in terms of question 50 of the enjoyment statement, which is that your analysis about the 0.5% statistic. Can you just explain in a simple way what got that 0.5% means for water quality?
Yeah, so the 0.5% that's related to an additional 1,807 hectares of CDP. And so that, in that modeling, they have a number of conservative assumptions. And so the main ones being that it doesn't account for any mitigations or reductions from CDP or any other land use. And that 0.5% is in relation to the baseline diffuse nitrogen load.
So what if any are the implications of what the last thing you just said, which is that the 0.5% is in relation to the baseline?
What
significance does that
have? Yeah, so in the future, if you do have reductions in loading from any land use, then you would expect that we wouldn't necessarily have an increase over the overall end load, and that we might just see that any reductions in overall end load may be offset slightly by no more than 0.5%, because I would expect that number to be smaller in reality with the adoption of mitigations and best management practice by CDP.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you made what you feel were conservative assumptions. Conservative in what direction?
In the way that the increase in load would be no more than that 80 tons. That's the largest load of that. But using the assumptions, I think you can make other assumptions that would be considerably smaller. For example, I didn't account for point source discharges in there. And so if you had point source discharges on top of the diffuse load, then that 80 tons would be smaller than 0.5%.
Thank you. If you just remain seated to answer any questions that my learned friends or the court has, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Reston. Just on that last point, I think it's relating to the same point, but if you can go to paragraph 48 of your evidence, where you're talking about the model, is that the same file? Or did you get it first? That model you're talking about there, is that the same model you were just talking about in answer to questions?
Yes.
Second sentence there says the model architecture means that increasing containment loads would simply result in increased attenuation rates to match the same load, total load calculated from in-stream sampling. And I'm just trying to understand what that means. Does that mean the model is designed to effectively cancel without any increases, or am I misunderstanding that?
No, it's in relation to the relative loading rates of different land uses. So I think in the previous paragraph, I state that those estimates that are used in the model are likely to underestimate how much is CVP and other land uses. And so that's the caveat saying that it's recognised that those sums are probably too low. But I don't think that would change the overall results of that model or the conclusions that I've drawn from that model information. Because the attenuation rates, which people can use, would necessarily change to meet the same calibration.
So does that mean if you increase nitrogen, you get increased attenuation? So if you
no.
I'm obviously misunderstanding, but if you can explain it again, that would be helpful.
I guess the model results in the way that I've presented it is a relative change from CVP to other land uses, or is it a proportional change. So I think the numbers themselves, the percentages, this is what I've used as preferred to hold, where the numbers might change. What would change if we had higher loading rates? And I think that's recognised in the NEWA model, in the report, that the attenuation rates are lower than might be expected, the calibrated attenuation rates that have been used in the model, because the land use loss rates from all land uses are likely to be too low.
Turn back to paragraph 18 in the document. And here you were in a discussion around crop rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And you say here your analysis indicates that the subcatchment and FMU scale CVP area and location are relatively static. It's at the business level where the rotations are dynamic. Now, what I understand from that statement is that across all CVP operators, the total area in hectares and also the location of those land parcels that are being used for CVP tends to be the same year on year, but it might be that you have different crops by the same operator on the land, or a different crop by a different operator on that same land. Is that, have I understood that correctly?
That's correct.
Great, thank you. And that
yeah,
then.
So just to give you that, that's not 100%, but that's generally relatively static. So this is, I think, in my table 3. Shows some of the that flux. So this is small, so it's the same still holds, but there are some exceptions there.
Yes, thank you, and we'll probably come to that soon. And so what you're saying there seems to align with what Ms. Holmes says, which is that growers generally rotate on existing vegetable grown land, and again, that's a general statement. So you agree with that? And so in any given year, you could identify what land is vegetable growing year, and generally that's going to be the same land year on year?
Yes, generally. I would say that by saying that that's mostly just within the Pukekohe region, that I think that statement holds true. Because that's the information I've used there is the land cover database and also the Lucas land cover modelling, and that I think is most accurate for the more intensive rotations where there's more time in a cultivated period, which is picked up by the satellite imagery. Elsewhere where there's more extensive rotations, where there's a longer period in pasture, then I don't know my system and my evidence. I've used the LCDB information within that, the group of vegetable area, and outside of that, used the NEMA model GIS information. So I think that's the best representation of what got to
Right, so when you talk about the Pokokoe area, you're talking about the entire Pokokoe specified vegetable area,
yeah,
as opposed, so that includes some which is in Waikato and some which is north of that.
Sure.
Yes. And so the statement here is most accurate within the Pokokoe SCGA, but it's accurate to some extent, but perhaps a lesser extent within the remainder of the Waikato region. So, right, thank you. Does the total, do you have any data about the extent of rotation at the business level? How much swapping there is from year to year as to which operator is using which van?
I don't, to hand. There's a small amount that I have in my evidence, which is the figure one, which shows that the growth of much that we may be pushing to target to some of the growers. But within that, it shows for three growers that come to the right there about some of the different scales of change at that business level.
Understood, thank you. So then, in terms of taking an individual CVT operator, does the total area of land that operator uses change much from year to year?
It can do, yeah. So for example, on that one, so there's three growers. The first grower contracts slightly, the 600 has a substantial margin. The second one expands slightly, and then the third one increases by almost 100%. And that's at an enterprise level, but all of that land, the new land, and the land that comes off each of these growers, the first grower, for example, which contracts, that's all remains mapped as cultivated land. So we can expect that where they've expanded into existing CDB land.
Yes. Then in terms of the individual growers' numbers, in terms of total area, in the period 2006 to 2016, the total area of land that an individual operator uses could go up and down by quite a bit in each year. Now, are you familiar with the tabularised example in paragraph 36 of the ODC legal submission that shows the hypothetical example? Have you seen that?
I've
got
a
copy. So, have you seen that table before? So that shows the example of, I suppose, within two subcatchments, how much an individual operator's use might vary from year A to year B, essentially, between those two subcatchments.
Yep.
Is the percentage change between those 2 years a realistic example?
Yes, it's probably not so much as grow two and buy something.
So in that example, so in year one, 10% in one subcatchment, 90% in the other, and then going to year three, it's essentially swapped completely, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Also, my statement was in reference to the total area of that grower. Does that change?
Well, if we assume, and I don't know if this is the assumption that this is based on, but if we assume that in years 1, 2, and 3, it's 100 hectares of total land, realistic that a grower has essentially shifted their operation from subcatchment 2 predominantly into subcatchment 1 over the space of a couple of years? How common would that example be?
I don't know, all I've looked at is 3 grows that I've had that spatial information for, so 3 out of the 9 grows there are in the region.
So you couldn't comment on whether this is typical?
No, I can't.
Now, if we can move to paragraph 20 of your evidence, and this is where you begin, or you talk about the LCDB and Lucas data, and you say, partway down paragraph 20, no subcatchment over the time periods you've mapped in the two tables below, which we'll come to, no subcatchment shows a net increase in area in either data set since 2008. So essentially what I take from that is that the area of existing CVP should be possible to determine with some degree of accuracy and comfort that it's correct.
Yes.
So moving down to table 1, that shows the total area used for short rotation cropland in particular years. And then table 2 sets out the total area of land use for cropland annual. Can you just help me understand the difference between tables 1 and 2 and how they relate to each other? I know it's different databases, but we're talking about the same descriptors, short rotation and cropland annual.
Well, they are comparable. I'm not going to tell you exactly the methodologies that LCDB and the analogues used that are different. And the reason I use both of those is to kind of add weight to the analysis that shows that there's generally been a small amount of change since 2008. So those are the only charts that I've had time slices that I've been able to do.
And later, when we come here soon, you talk about the way you've used those data sets to derive what you see as the total area of CVP in the PC1 catchments. So, do these, is all of the land then represented in these tables subject to crop rotation?
I would say no, because so I do discuss that the short rotation cropland and now CDA and also the annual cropland in the Lucas, that's not limited to CDP. So that's any land that has a cultivated period. So that might be a farm system question, but one assumes that some fodder crop areas or maize growing or some other cultivated systems potentially trying to rotate.
So that's why later you come to a lower number total for CVP in the PC1 catchments than we'd get if we added up all of the columns in that year.
Yeah, and so I explain why I say that because of that short rotation crop band within the SVGA, I expect that is all CDP outside the SVGA, then I think some of that match short rotation crop land is likely to be used by land use, there's other cultivated land uses.
Okay, thank you, that's helpful. Do these numbers include land that's lying fallow in any given year, or is it just the growing area?
It's based on satellite imagery analysis, so I would assume that, well, fallow land would presumably have a cover crop, so I don't know, I can't answer that.
So if we're in a position where we're trying to establish what the genuine total area of CVP is, as existing CVP, and if we were interested to know whether that included fallow land or not, depending on what was on it, and that rotation year, the rest year perhaps, it would be important to know whether these numbers are represented or not, perhaps, wouldn't it?
Yes, I would say that any fallow period would be captured within that SDGA area, so the vegetable growing area, because as I've shown, that doesn't much flux or change year on year. So if there was fallow periods that were coming in and out of that classification, then there was a change in
Well, that might be right, but the alternative approach, the alternative way to look at it might be that if, for example, a tenth of the land was left fallow in any given year, the total numbers here would be consistent year on year, but that still missed the 10% that was being left fallow. So we, at least, is the assumption you're making about what these show, does that also hold if we assume that these don't include fallow land? In other words, the static nature of the areas year on year don't automatically show that it includes fallow land, does it?
So when you say fallow land, what do you mean by that?
Where I'm definitely getting beyond my expertise, but if I can explain why or how I understand it. Crop rotation, as I understand it, could involve the 1 year planting crop A, and the next year planting crop B, the next year planting crop C, because each of those has different impacts on the soil, microbial nature, and other bits and pieces. But then you might get to a point where after a dozen or half a dozen years, that soil needs to rest, and therefore it's left either unvegetated or perhaps more likely it has a grass seed sown or something like that. Now that's my very loose understanding, which I'm very happy to be corrected in, but that's how I'm using that word in terms of my question.
Well, I would presume that then you need to put on that description in this definition, quite absolutely. But there's just time slices at particular points in time. So on average, it's kind of capturing the dominant land use on that, which would be cultivated land.
Okay. Do you have any data about breaking this down by subcatchment? So the total area of land within each subcatchment that was used to seed your family for these 2 years?
I don't have it to hand, but I mean, it's very special exercise that you give overlay the subcatchments of the subcatchments.
Okay, so it does exist.
Yes.
Do you know what the subcatchment is in the Waikato and Waipa catchments that have the largest percentage of that subcatchment used for CBP land? CBP operations?
As a proportion of the subcatchment?
Yes.
I would assume that would be the
So you think maybe the book that
what
percentage of that subcatchment would be used to see if they
find it? I don't know if it's on the head, but 30%, 40%?
Do you have it to hand? I don't have it to hand, no. That's why I'm asking. Okay, thank you. Do you have any data on the contribution of that CVP to nitrogen levels in that subcatchment?
I have looked at the ceiling for subcatchments and calculated the dominant contributor of nitrogen to those. And Fokkabe is the only one where CVP is the largest contributor of nitrogen. There's two subcatchments where Fairbairn is the largest contributor.
can I get you to find the post-conferencing version of the provisions? It should be there on the table still, I think. They're in demand. That's the regional council's version of the provisions that it prepared and filed post-conferencing. If you can turn to page 29, which is Controlled Activity Rule 3.11.4.5. And you see the condition 2 requires an individual grower to provide the following information. And it's over a 10-year period, 2006 to 2016. Given what you know about how much variation there is from year to year for an individual grower in terms of what their land total area of land use was, do you have an estimate of what the total combined CVP area might be for the PC1 catchments if each grower picked their largest year in that 10-year period?
Well, roughly 7,000 acres.
That's based on your estimate of what the total actually is at the moment.
I say it would be larger than 7,000, presumably, if looking at 10 year period, something like that might fall across
more. Yes, that was my expectation, that it would be a larger number. So you have indicated paragraph 33, the total CVP area in the Waikato River catchment is 7,020 hectares, and that's based on actual amount in a particular year. And so this rule here is endeavouring to identify existing CVP, but you accept that it does so in a way that's generous to the hawk industry as a whole by allowing each individual grower to pick their largest year if they wish to do so. And likewise, if they had multiple years where the balance was different between sub-catchments, so the 90-10 example, for example, in terms of the legal submissions, if that wasn't representative for them of what they'd like to do in the future years, they could choose a different year that had a more even split between sub-catchments. It's fine. I'm happy if you don't feel able to comment on that.
Yeah, I couldn't answer that.
It's fine. Can you turn to table 4 in your evidence? Paragraph 33, which is where that total CVP area number is that we've been talking about, the 7,020 hectares. So that's where you get, that's how you've combined various information you've got and you've come to a total of 7,020 hectares for total existing CVP, that's paragraph 33.
Yep.
And then we go down to table 4. Now, what I wasn't quite sure on is why that total for the PC1 catchments is 6104 hectares.
Yes, so that's the just is below that. The areas in table 4 are taken from the Never Models spreadsheet information.
Right, so.
Because that LCDB, the Never Model, which includes all of the loss rates, has 6,104 hectares of CVP, which I discussed, I think, in June. total area as well. So you can just I know that is about 7,000 acres closer to reality.
Great, thank you. I was just interested because this came after your 7,020, so I was just trying to make sure that it's
clear. And just and it's confusing because there's actually two numbers in the new information, is a slightly different one in the GIS information, and a different one in the water quality model. There's some adjustments made.
Models, huh?
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Reeson.
Thank you.
How long do you like the beans in a minute? Should we take the break now?
I expect I'll be able to finish before the break.
Excellent. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Easton. Just got a couple of paragraphs in your evidence I'd just like some clarifications on. The first one is paragraph 28. And so in this paragraph you're talking about limited opportunity for new CVP in the Auckland region, and then you also talk about land loss to urban development extending southwards into the Waikato. Am I right to understand that this is, you treat that as expansion rather than rotation?
Yeah, expansion is really the area that's lost, that is lost to urban in Auckland, in the area within the Waikato would be treated as rotation.
And so that would be, in terms of the Waikato then, if there were land lost and there were, if we call it greenfields areas that were to be established as CVP as replacement, you consider that that would be appropriate to consider as rotation?
Yes, the CVP area rotates onto that and there's no net change in CVP area, then I think yes, that should be considered as rotation.
Right.
In essence, what's happening in that situation would be that urban land use is replacing whatever the land use that the CVP then rotates onto. And so, if that land use, say, is an intensive dairy operation, at the scale of assessment, say, if the CVP rotates within the same subcategory, then there's no net change in contaminant loss from the CDP because all it's done is change location. And if that land use that CDP replaces is producing more nitrogen or any other contaminant than that urban that's coming in, then I would actually expect a reduction.
But equally under horticulture New Zealand provisions, it could be anywhere within the FMU rather than necessarily within the subcatchment.
Yeah, the same statement holds for the FMU scale.
But equally, it wouldn't necessarily be dairy that would be replaced with CVP. It could be some other land use as well.
That's right. It could be land use. I did make an assessment based on land use class 1 and 2 and pasture, which I think is the most likely, and that CVP would rotate to it. And in that instance, I would expect that an improvement in water quality.
But that's quite a different, in terms of what constitutes rotation, that's very different to what we've generally heard as far as for soil health, the need to rotate crops, and it's all essentially happening within the same area, so it's a zero-sum game, essentially. That's quite different in the context of...
Yeah, I mean, the reasons for the rotation is different, but the water quality effects, I don't think, are any different.
Okay, thank you. And then one other question. If you go down to paragraph 56, and so this is a section of your evidence outlining modelling undertaken to demonstrate the comparative leaching from CVP versus what other land use that might replace in terms of expansion. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Just keen to understand in the final sentence of 56, we talk about the modelling for Block 3 showed a net reduction in sediment losses for CVP under best management practice in comparison to pasture, as explained by my paragraph 77. Now, I looked at 77, but I wasn't able to understand from that. As far as this consideration of best management practice, did you apply that, was that applied just to CVP, or was it also applied to the pastoral land use that we're replacing?
That potentially might be a question for Andrew Barber, who's the modelling I rely on for that in Block 3. But from memory, yeah, that was just for CVP.
Right, which wouldn't be an apples and oranges, wouldn't be an apples and apples assessment, would it? In that it's a best case scenario of sorts for CVP, but not for the replaced land use.
Yeah, I mean, there's very little change either way, I think, is the takeaway from that.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. We'll take a break now for